The big and immediate question raised here this afternoon was, would the Russians take advantage of this moment of confusion and bewilderment in the Western world to press their cause? There are no easy answers to this question tonight, but the drift of informed opinion is that they will not. Confusion exists in Moscow, too, when there is confusion in Washington. And both capitals in the last 3 years have developed a healthy respect for one another's nuclear power. Neither side wishes to push the other in a moment of national crisis. The late President Kennedy did not last fall after the Cuban crisis when he could have, and now Premier Khrushchev is not expected to push the United States at this moment of our national crisis. Instead, both sides will sit tight and move easily, not rock the boat. Certainly not until Khrushchev has had a prolonged chance to examine the United States and the Western world under President Johnson's tutelage and guidance. This is Marvin Kald in Washington.
The foreign policy of the United States is not just a matter of the whim of the chief executive. It is the expression of a national will and a national purpose, and it is based on a national effort, which was apparent in the speech that President Kennedy made in Fort Worth this very morning. It was to be his last speech of a political tour of Texas, of an important southern state, in which he was looking ahead to the election of next year. But in this speech, and even on this political occasion, it was plain to his listeners, and it was plain to the people who analyzed the words of the chief executive of the United States, that his mind was very much on the problem that Marvin Kalb has just defined, the problem of maintaining a position of strength from which the United States could defend and maintain its own policy, its own interests in the world, and also defend its allies and associates.
Now let's continue our WCCO coverage with a list of church services for this evening. Now this is a list that we have not brought you before. We've brought you many, and here are more. A prayer service at the Minnetonka Lutheran Church tonight at 8 o'clock. A prayer service at 9 tonight at the Woodlake Lutheran Church in Richfield. The chapel at Arlington Hills Lutheran Church will be open throughout the evening for prayer and meditation. A memorial service at 7:30 this evening at the Oak Grove Lutheran Church in Richfield. The Bethany Church in Richfield opened this evening for prayer and meditation. The Gethsemane Baptist Church at Hanson and Northdale in Coon Rapids, a special memorial service at 8. The St. Stephen's Lutheran Church in West St. Paul opened for prayer and meditation. The Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Eden Prairie opened for prayer at 8, services at 9. Gustavus Adolphus Lutheran Church, Northeast Minneapolis, a prayer service tonight at 8. Gustavus Adolphus Lutheran Church at 27th and Lincoln Northeast, open at 8 for a prayer service, a service of prayer at the Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Hopkins. Now let's rejoin CBS, which is bringing you portions of a speech given at Dallas this morning by the late President of the United States, John Kennedy.
Contributed to its growth. He speaks for Fort Worth. He speaks for the country. And I don't know any city that's better represented in the Congress of the United States than Fort Worth. And if there are any Democrats here this morning, I'm sure you won't hold that against them. Three years ago, last September, I came here on the Vice President and spoke at Burke Burnett Park. And I called in that speech for a national security policy and a national security system which was second to none. A position which said not first, but if, when, and how, but first. That city responded to that call as it has through its history. And we have been putting that pledge into practice ever since. And I want to say a word about that pledge here in Fort Worth, which understands national defense and its importance to the security of the United States. During the days of the Indian War, this city was a fort. During the days of World War I, even before the United States got into the war, Royal Canadian Air Force pilots were training here. During the days of World War II, the great Liberator bombers, on which my brother flew with his co-pilot from this city, were produced here. First non-stop flight around the world took off and returned here in a plane built in factories here. The first truly intercontinental bomber, the B-36, was produced here. The B-58, which is the finest weapon system in the world today, which it demonstrated most recently in flying from Tokyo to London with an average speed of nearly 1,000 miles per hour, is a Fort Worth product. The Iroquois helicopter from Fort Worth is a mainstay in our fight against the guerrillas in South Vietnam. The transportation of crews between our missile sites is done in planes produced here in Fort Worth. So wherever the confrontation may occur, and in the last 3 years it's occurred at least 3 occasions, in Laos, in Berlin, in Cuba, and it will again, wherever it occurs, the products of Fort Worth and the men of Fort Worth provide us with a sense of security. And in the not too distant future.
This is a recording of President Kennedy's last speech this morning.
A new Fort Worth product. And I'm glad that there was a table separating Mr. Hicks and myself. A new Fort Worth product. The TFX, Tactical Fighter Experimental. Nobody knows what those words mean, but that's what they mean. Tactical Fighter Experimental will serve the forces of freedom and will be the number one airplane in the world today. There's been a good deal of discussion of the long and hard-fought competition to win the TFX contract, but very little discussion about what this plane will do. It will be the first operational aircraft ever produced that can literally spread its wings through the air. It will thus give us a single plane capable of carrying out missions of speed as well as distance, able to fly very far in one form or very fast in another. It can take off from rugged, short airstrips, enormously increasing the Air Force's ability to participate in limited wars. The same basic plane will serve the Navy's carriers, saving the taxpayers at least $1 billion in cost if they built separate planes for the Navy and the Air Force. The government of Australia, by purchasing $125 million of TFX planes before they are even off the drawing boards, has already testified to the merit of this plane, and at the same time, it's confident in the ability of Fort Worth to meet its schedule. In all these ways, the success of our national defense depends upon this city in the western United States, 10,000 miles from Vietnam, 5,000 or 6,000 miles from Berlin, thousands of miles from trouble spots in Latin America, in Africa or the Middle East. And yet Fort Worth and what it does and what it produces participates in all these great historic events. Texas as a whole and Fort Worth bear particular responsibility for this national defense effort. For military procurement in this state totals nearly $1.25 billion, fifth highest among all the states of the Union. There are more military personnel on active duty in this state than any in the nation, save one. And it's not Massachusetts. Any in the nation, save one, with a combined military-civilian defense payroll of well over $1 billion. I don't recite these for any partisan purpose. They're the result of American determination to be second to none. And as a result of the effort which this country has made in the last 3 years, we are second to none. In the past 3 years, we have increased the defense budget of the United States by over 20%, increased the program of acquisition for Polaris submarines from 24 to 41, increased our Minuteman missile purchase program by more than 75%, doubled the number of strategic bombers and missiles on alert, doubled the number of nuclear weapons available in the strategic alert forces, increased the tactical nuclear forces deployed in Western Europe by over 60%, added 5 combat-ready divisions to the armies of the United States, and 5 tactical fighter wings to the Air Force of the United States, increased our strategic airlift capability by 75%, and increased our special counterinsurgency forces, which are engaged now in South Vietnam, by 600%. I hope those who want a strong America and place it on some signs will also place those figures next to it.
This is a recording of President Kennedy's last speech in Fort Worth this morning.
This is not an easy effort. This requires sacrifice by the people of the United States. But this is a very dangerous and uncertain world. As I said earlier, on 3 occasions in the last 3 years, the United States has had a direct confrontation. No one can say when it will come again. No one expects our life will be easy. Certainly not in this decade, and perhaps not in this century. But we should realize what a burden and responsibility the people of the United States have borne for so many years. Here, a country which lived in isolation, divided and protected by the Atlantic and the Pacific, uninterested in the struggles of the world around it. Here, in the short space of 18 years after the Second World War, we put ourselves by our own will and by necessity into defensive alliances with countries all around the globe. Without the United States, South Vietnam would collapse overnight. Without the United States, the CETO alliance would collapse overnight. Without the United States, the CENTO alliance would collapse overnight. Without the United States, there would be no NATO, and gradually Europe would drift into neutralism and indifference. Without the effort of the United States and the Alliance for Progress, the communist advance onto the mainland of South America would long ago have taken place. So this country, which desires only to be free, which desires to be secure, which desires to live at peace for 18 years under 3 different administrations, has borne more than its share of the burden, has stood watch for more than its number of years. I don't think that we are fatigued or tired. We would like to live as we once lived, but history will not permit it. The communist balance of power is still strong. The balance of power is still on the side of freedom. We are still the keystone and the arch of freedom, and I think we will continue to do as we have done in our past, our duty, and the people of Texas will be in the lead. So I'm glad to come. I'm glad to come to this state, which has played such a significant role in so many efforts in this century, and to say that here in Fort Worth, you people will be playing a major role in the maintenance of the security of the United States for the next 10 years. I'm confident, as I look to the future, that our chances for security, our chances for peace, are better than they've been in the past. And the reason is because we're stronger. And with that strength is a determination to not only maintain the peace, but also the vital interests of the United States. To that great cause, Texas and the United States are committed. Thank you.
This has been a recording of President Kennedy's last speech made this morning in Fort Worth, Texas, to a breakfast meeting of the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce. Only 3 hours after he made this speech, this man, in the full prime of his strength and vigor and clarity of mind, was cut down by the senseless bullet of an assassin. Here now is a message for our listeners and our affiliated stations across the country. The CBS radio network will supply continuous programming throughout this evening and until 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. That is, 11 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Mountain, and 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. This programming will consist entirely of news broadcasts and appropriate music. We will provide similar network programming tomorrow and Sunday. At the close of tonight's programming, we will notify our affiliated stations in greater detail of our plans for the weekend. We will now have a 5-second pause for stations to identify themselves. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Studios, Minneapolis, St. Paul at 830 WCCO. We continue our coverage now and bring you a list of social events tonight that have been canceled. The Altman Junior High School Dance at St. Paul Park, the Hootenanny at St. Michael's High School and at Pillsbury Citizen Service, the High School Dance at New Ulm, social games at the Irish Club on Rice Street in St. Paul, a dance by the Knights of Columbus at Rogers, Minnesota, tomorrow night, a dance tonight at White Eagle Hall in northeast Minneapolis, in Centerville, a card party at St. Genevieve Church, a fun frolic at Visitation Parish at Minnesota Valley Country Club, an NFO dance at Waconia, the Excelsior Junior High dance, the high school dance tonight at St. Paul Monroe. These are all cancellations. The Catholic Mixer at the Prom in St. Paul, the Canby High School dance, the fun night of Job's Daughters in South St. Paul, the fun fest at Pillsbury School in northeast Minneapolis, the dance at Prior Lake High School, the Youth Center program at Elam Baptist Church in Minneapolis, the Athletic Jamboree at Renville, Minnesota, the card party at Unity House in Minneapolis, at Coon Rapids, the Bonanza Club and the Lions Club dance. Those are all cancellations for tonight. A reminder again that the Minnesota football game tomorrow with Wisconsin has been called off. No game tomorrow, and all Dad's Day activities at the university also have been called off. 3 minutes past 7, 28 degrees is our CCO temperature. Rain and snow in CCO land weather forecasts. In North Dakota, occasional cloudiness through tomorrow night with scattered light snow tomorrow and tomorrow night. Lows tonight from 8 below to 10 above. Highs tomorrow 20 to 35. South Dakota, occasional cloudiness through tomorrow night with scattered snow flurries in the northwest tomorrow. Lows tonight from 0 to 15 above. Highs tomorrow from 20 to 40. For Iowa, the rain will end tonight with mostly fair skies tomorrow and tomorrow night. Lows tonight, 15 to 35. Highs tomorrow in the 30s. Wisconsin, rain changing to snow in the north half, rain mixed with snow in the south tonight. There's the chance of a heavy accumulation of snow in excess of 4 inches near Lake Superior tonight. Tomorrow, snow flurries in the northeast and extreme north, cloudy skies elsewhere, partly cloudy tomorrow night. Lows tonight, 10 to 28, highs tomorrow, 15 to 34. Minnesota, diminishing cloudiness and much colder tonight with occasional snow in the northeast. Tomorrow, fair and colder. Occasional cloudiness and continued cold tomorrow night with scattered light snow in the north. Lows tonight from 0 to 15, highs tomorrow 10 to 25. For the Twin Cities area, diminishing cloudiness and much colder tonight. Tomorrow, fair and colder. Occasional cloudiness and a little colder tomorrow night. The low tonight, 12 above. The high tomorrow, 20. The low tomorrow night, 5 above. The road information section of the Minnesota Highway Department says driving conditions in northwestern Minnesota are much better after blading and sanding. However, there are still icy spots, and motorists who plan to drive in the Crookston, Wadena, Bemidji, Thief River Falls area should be on constant alert. Now let's continue our coverage following the assassination of President Kennedy with more information from CBS Radio headquarters in New York and Dallas Townsend discussing Lee Oswald.
Citizenship, but got a U.S. government paid passage home when he had a change of heart. Oswald was born in New Orleans October 18, 1939. 20 years later, on October 30th, 1959, he appeared at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow and told officials there that he wanted to renounce his American citizenship. At that time, he was reported to have told officials, "I am a Marxist." The FBI has confirmed that Oswald did go to Russia and did ask for Soviet citizenship. He had recently been discharged from the Marine Corps. Oswald told the embassy officials that he planned to tell Soviet officials everything he learned while he was a radar operator during his 3-year enlistment in the Marines. Embassy officials said Russia never granted Oswald's request for citizenship. In any case, after having been in Russia for 3 years, according to one report in the Minsk area, and after marrying a Russian woman who still speaks no English, and after fathering a baby, after all this, Oswald, in February 1962, apparently had a change of heart. He wrote the embassy in Moscow and asked for a passport to the United States. By that time, he had married the Russian woman, whose name is given as Marina Nikolaevna, a hospital employee in the city of Minsk. They have either one child or two children, it's not definite which. Embassy officials reviewed his case, and since he had not been given Soviet citizenship, it was decided to give him a passport to the United States. Government records in Washington show that he left Moscow at the end of May 1962. The embassy in Moscow advanced him $435 to defray the cost of his trip. This is a customary practice in the cases of Americans stranded in a foreign country. It's not clear from the records if he ever repaid the loan. According to Carlos Bringier of the Cuban Student Directory in New Orleans, Oswald was in New Orleans 2 months ago as the chairman of a pro-Castro Fair Play for Cuba committee. He was reported to have been arrested for allegedly distributing pro-communist propaganda on a street corner. The House Committee on Un-American Activities says Oswald appears to be the same man who headed a Fair Play for Cuba committee in New Orleans. Police records there show that he did pay a $10 fine. This year, Oswald applied for another passport. He told the State Department he wanted to visit various countries in Western Europe and also Poland and the Soviet Union. He said he planned to make the trip between October 1963 and December or January of next year. The passport was issued at New Orleans on June 25th of this year. It's not clear whether Oswald ever repaid the money loaned for his passage back to the United States on his first trip, and obviously he did not use the newly issued passport. That's the story on Oswald as it begins to build up as more details come in from Dallas, from New Orleans, and from Washington, as this man, this with a peculiar background, is still being questioned in Dallas, Texas, in connection with the fatal shooting of policeman J.D. Tippit, and perhaps also with the assassination of President Kennedy.
So we don't know whether it was the act of a madman or the act of a left-wing political fanatic, or if it was, as Radio Moscow keeps insisting, the action of a right-wing fanatic. Radio Moscow has, of course, harped on the opposition to President Kennedy's foreign policy that has come to the surface in Dallas, or perhaps as much, if not more, than in many cities in the United States. It was only a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, on October 24th, that Adlai Stevenson, visiting Dallas on United Nations Day to make a speech on the United States and UN policy in that city, was spat upon and hit on the head by a woman with carrying a sign objecting to America's UN policy and to him personally.
Dick, I was interested to note in the last report we had from Stuart Nowins in Moscow, the speed with which the Russians, in their accounts of President Kennedy's death, did pin it on right-wing extremists.
Well, I must say that the spontaneous reaction even of non-communists, of non-Russians at the United Nations this afternoon, when the word first circulated in the corridors, was that, based, of course, on Mr. Stevenson's experience in Dallas and on what one has heard from Dallas and the whole stamping grounds of right-wing elements like General Edwin Walker and others, the conclusion that was leaped to at the UN was that right-wing extremists might very well be responsible.
But I think we should point out, and we should emphasize, Dick, that at the moment there is absolutely no evidence at all to justify that assumption.
And
churches throughout the Twin Cities are packed tonight with persons marking the passing of President Kennedy. At the Basilica of St. Mary's in Minneapolis, a requiem mass was held this evening. Many other church services planned for or going on right now this evening. Here are some of them, some that we have not given you earlier on WCCO. A prayer service at the Emerson Avenue Congregational Church in Minneapolis until 9. At St. Mary's Episcopal Church in St. Paul, meditation from 7:30 to 9. A special service at the Wesley Methodist Church in St. Paul at 7:30. A memorial service at Mayflower Congregational Church in Minneapolis at 8. A special service at the Presbyterian Church of the Master in Coon Rapids at 8:30. A prayer service of the Lutheran Church of St. Philip the Beacon at Oakwood School at 8 tonight. A service at Gloria Day Lutheran Church in St. Paul at 9 p.m. We now have from CBS details on the condition of Governor Connally of Texas, and so we rejoin CBS.
After 4 hours of chest surgery, a team of three surgeons, including one rushed from Houston 250 miles away, removed one of the governor's ribs and repaired a lung that had been cut by a rifle bullet. The governor, it appears, turned slightly in the car as the shots were fired, and the chief of surgeons at the hospital said that it saved his life. If he had not turned, the bullet would have gone through the middle of his back and probably would have punctured the heart. As it was, a fragment struck Governor Connally's right wrist, fracturing it. Other fragments struck his left leg just above the knee and lodged there. The governor was conscious. He gasped to an aide, "Take care of Nellie." That is his wife, who was sitting next to him in the car, in the jump seat, just before the Kennedy couple. The bullet entered Connally's right shoulder, emerged from his chest, fragments lodged in his ribs. The fifth rib was then removed during surgery. As it stands now, apparently, the governor is, while still in serious, nevertheless in satisfactory condition, and one of his aides says that all damage has been arrested. Incidentally, the governor apparently does not yet know that President Kennedy is dead.
Dick, the Kennedy family, or a good many members of it, is gathering at Hyannisport, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, and we're going to get a report from there now from CBS News correspondent Tom Costigan.
Hyannisport is just as saddened and stunned by the assassination of the president, and even more so, because here the feeling was one of personal warmth and close friendship. The Kennedy family, and particularly the president, were known as friends and neighbors. Diagonally across the street is the home of Larry Newman, a longtime and close friend of the late president. Mr. and Mrs. Newman were stunned by the news, as everyone else was. They had looked forward to the coming holiday in the heightened spirit of Thanksgiving and the gathering of the Kennedy clan. In the Kennedy home across the street, the lights are on, gleaming eerily through the rolling mist. Senator Ted Kennedy and his sister Eunice Shriver joined their mother and father late this afternoon. Two sources close to the family said Ambassador Joseph Kennedy, under strict nursing care for the past 10 days, has not been told of his son's sudden death. This morning, Larry Newman, who has played host to the scores of White House correspondents since 1960, had been preparing to hang an autographed picture of the president in his living room in preparation for Thanksgiving and the gathering of the Kennedy clan and the press and the scores of other White House aides. The picture was autographed to the Newman's three children, and 5-year-old Leila told me she had a pet nickname for the president. She called him, she said, Mr. Kissable. This is Tom Costigan in Hyannisport.
Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, who flew back to Washington from Dallas with the body of her husband, then accompanied it in the Navy ambulance to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and she is there now. We'll get a report on the scene there at Bethesda Naval Hospital from Tony Sargent in Washington.
The body of President Kennedy is here at Bethesda Naval Hospital, just north of Washington. Hospital sources indicate a post-mortem examination is underway. Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy and Attorney General Robert Kennedy accompanied the ambulance in the 45-minute drive from Andrews Air Force Base to Bethesda. On arrival, they entered the hospital's main entrance while at least 1,000 spectators watched from the front lawn. Dozens more, patients and hospital staff members, peered from half-lighted windows in the 19-story building. The ambulance then left the main entrance, carrying the president's body around to a rear door near the morgue area in which the postmortem would be conducted. Minutes later, Defense Chief Robert McNamara arrived here after meeting with President Johnson. An Army officer with the presidential party indicated the body will go from Bethesda Naval Hospital later tonight to a funeral home. There, it presumably would be prepared to lie in repose tomorrow at the White House and through Sunday and Monday morning in the Capitol Rotunda. This is Tony Sargent at Bethesda Naval Hospital.
The grief at President Kennedy's death is worldwide. In London, Britain's political leaders tonight paid tribute to him in a special nationwide television program. The Prime Minister, Sir Alec Douglas Hume, said, "There are times in life when minds and hearts stand still, and one such is now. All of you will have felt, as I did, that everything in one cried out in protest at the news that President Kennedy was dead at the hand of the assassin. This young, gay, and brave statesman, killed in the full vigor of his manhood when he bore on his shoulders all the cares and hopes of the world. The British Prime Minister recalled that only a few weeks ago, he walked with President Kennedy in the grounds of the White House. The president then told him of his plan to guard and keep the peace of the world. As I recall his vivid presence, said Sir Alec, he lives in my mind as a man who, first of all, was a man of peace, and a man with a deep religious faith dedicated to healing the divisions between men, and then as a man of physical courage. He was a man who was determined that the curse of war should never scourge mankind again, if he could do anything to arrest the danger. He was one who had in his power and in his hand such power as had never been given before in the history of man to mortal man. There was a touching gesture in West Berlin tonight, the West Berlin which President Kennedy visited earlier this year and to which he gave such a share of his own optimism and such a share of his own courage. Some 25,000 West Berliners took part in a midnight torchlight demonstration in memory of the president. They marched to the city hall where the president himself had addressed them, addressed this great gathering, and said, "I am a Berliner." There, Mayor Willy Brandt was to speak to him. The march, appropriately enough, was called by students' organizations. President Kennedy was especially popular with young people everywhere in the world, Germany too, but people of all age groups turned out, many of them wearing black armbands of mourning.
Dick, there have been similar gestures in this country, gestures almost without number. Scores of weekend sports events, theatrical performances, and social events have been canceled or postponed. Major stock exchanges have closed, and numerous businesses followed suit. And now here's the latest from Dallas. Lee H. Oswald, held as a prime suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy, today was formally charged with the murder of a Dallas policeman who was slain shortly after the president was. That policeman was J.D. Tippit. He and another policeman rushed into the rear entrance of a movie theater on a telephone tip from the cashier, who had heard the news that the president had been shot, and reported to police by telephone that she had seen a man rush into the theater who looked as if he were trying to escape, and she said he kept changing his seat. The policeman rushed in. Apparently, shots were exchanged, and Tippit was mortally wounded. The other policeman, McDonald, M.N. McDonald, seized Oswald and subdued him after what seems to have been a violent scuffle. Oswald still has not admitted the killing of Patrolman Tippit, and he has denied having anything to do with the assassination of the president. But almost certainly there must be a strong connection. Flags are flying.